This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to the podcast on a dark day in U.S. history. As we were doing the show, Glenn is, he'll give you some great updates on the work that has been done through the Nazarene Fund. And at least, thank God they acted quickly, because the situation in the middle of the show shook out of control. You, of course, probably know by now the bombing that went off. That happens in the middle of the program today. And you can get our instant reaction to it. And some attempt to put it in perspective, though it's impossible to put a failure like this into perspective. It really is. BlazeTV.com/Glenn is the place to go to subscribe. We'll have more coverage all day and all the shows on The Blaze, of course, including Stu Does America. I'd love to have you subscribe to the podcast as well. If that's how you get the show, if that's the best way for you to take it in, we'll have all the details as they come out. But there's just not much more to say. This is a terrible, terrible day. Here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Welcome to the Glenn Beck program. I just want you to know, we'll talk about this later, but I want you to know the discrediting of the Nazarene Fund and probably me and this program is coming, because we are not making friends with the State Department. We got a tip today from a news organization that had a somebody inside of a government organization, and they said that there was a meeting today about us, and the warning was they're coming, and I know that, and that's fine. And what we're doing here is, we believe, God's work, and so be it. If this is the end of our career, my career, it's fine. I am totally fine with that. I just want you to know that awful things are going to be said in the future. I hope not. But they're not going to let us sit here and do what we've done without ramifications. Laura Logan is with us now. Hello, Laura. How are you?
You know, again, I'm very glad to be here. And I will tell you, I don't care what they say. I will stand by you and the Nazarene Fund, because the only people right now who are more evil than Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are the State Department and the agency and all the others who are doing everything possible in their power to prevent decent Americans and good people standing up for our allies and rescuing people and saving them from certain death. And I've been up all night working this for 8 days, and it is reprehensible.
So, Laura, people don't understand what... How can the State Department do this? What are they doing exactly? What is the White House? How are they thwarting? Can you okay. share some examples?
Oh, yeah, easily. So, because I've been doing this all night. So, well, for example, I have had, like, I had 150 people, families, that I ripped out of their homes with children and everything else, all of whom are targeted for death because they worked with 60 Minutes or they were legendary, you know, in the military and fought the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And as the plane was coming in to land, my American Special Operations contact had told me that they had been denied clearance. So suddenly out of nowhere, when they had clearance before, they denied clearance. The pilots, and I will tell you, there's so many operators on the ground who are just outraged at what they're being asked to participate in and be part of, this betrayal. And so the team running the operation said, no, we're not going to do it. We're landing anyway. And they went to look without a landing strip and without lights for a place to land, and they were coming in, and they were threatened that they would be shot down. So they had to, you know, they had to circle, and they were running out of fuel, and they've gone back to another country, and they're trying to get the clearances again to come back in, and being blocked by the State Department. Yesterday, the State Department changed again the evacuation paperwork. They changed the paperwork. You're in the last few moments. I'm going to tell you now, Glenn, I heard all through yesterday and through last night that by nightfall today in Kabul, which is not far away, they would be gone. We have reports of the 82nd Airborne, you know, evicting Christians and American citizens and others from the airport and bulldozing checkpoints. We have reports of gates being welded shut, which of course I can't confirm from a distance, but there's been multiple reports.
I will tell you, we have those same reports, Laura. So there's a second source. We have the same reports.
And I got to tell you that, I mean, I have literally got photographs of, you know, a pregnant woman, wife of a DEA agent, with a child at the checkpoint, battered and beaten and bloody, who's fought her way to get there. We've got special operators, special operations guys and Marines who are out there rescuing people, risking their lives, only to get to the airport and be denied access by the U.S. government, whether they instruct the Marines or the 82nd on the gates to shut them down, whether they shut down the Marines. Right now, one of my contacts that I've been working with for days said that he's had, you know, dozens and dozens of messages to the Marines have now gone unanswered. They've stopped talking to him. Everybody's scrubbing their packages, and they're on their way out. And, you know, now there's reports of a suicide bomber and gunfire, mm-hmm. which families that I'm in touch with on the ground witnessed. I was talking them through it and trying to keep them calm. But I tell you what makes me so angry. They're going to say that they had to shut everything down early because of the threat level. And it is absolute nonsense. They were doing this and shutting it down long before that even happened. And even more reprehensible and dishonest, this is how disgusting these people are. They are now trying to say that Siraj Haqqani, the deputy leader of the Taliban, right, whose brother, Anas Haqqani, was sitting next to Zulmay Khalilzad, the U.S. presidential envoy at the talks in Doha, that they have separated from the Taliban and they've gone with ISIS-K. You know why they're saying that, Glenn? You know why they're making up that absolute lie? Because they know they've been called out. And I was one of the people that called them out. So was Tom Jocelyn at the Long War Journal and a bunch of others. Because the Haqqani Network is a foreign terrorist organization designated by the U.S. Government in 2012. And it is illegal under U.S. law to negotiate or support terrorists, to provide any kind of support for them in any way whatsoever. And now that it's been called out, look, lo and behold, how convenient. How convenient that suddenly the deputy leader of the Taliban has split away. I don't believe it for one single second. In fact, I'll put my life on it that that is an abject lie. Even if they say it themselves, that's a deal that they struck. When the head of the CIA went and met with Mullah Baradar, the man that they chose to lead the Islamic Emirates. And by the way, guess who they chose as their intel chief? The guy who's going to be in charge of intelligence for the Taliban is... his strongest ally is who? The IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. He ran training camps for the Taliban inside Iran, and he and the new head of IRGC are bonded at the hip. And one of the chief political advisors of the Taliban in Kabul right now, advising Mullah Baradar, is the other person in the Taliban who is close to IRGC. They're two top Iranian contacts. And you watch out, Israel and Taiwan and all of these countries all over the world, because right now, America's enemies are coming for us. And all these people are going about their daily life in America, and they want to talk about this and they want to talk about that, and they just want to pretend that Afghanistan is not happening. You wait, because we are now isolated on the world stage. We are defined by betrayal and drenched in the blood of Afghans and American citizens. And I've got soldiers, special operations soldiers, veterans, some of them 10, 15, 20 tours, vomiting last night, vomiting, when they realized what they were being asked to participate in. Because this betrayal is an historic shame that will define the United States until the end of time. For as long as we still have, because it is part of a greater assault on this country that will ensure the end of America, the end of the American idea, and act as a warning to anyone all over the world. Don't believe in it. Don't fight for it. Don't stand by it, because they don't even believe in their own idea. Look at them.
Laura, I can't. First of all, everything you say is true. I mean, I believe every word that you just said is accurate. What people don't understand, and it was shocking to me how many times in the last 24 hours since being here, I have heard former allies say, "We're done." You know, to have Parliament yesterday discuss the fact that they will not come to our aid or perform any operations jointly with us until this president and vice president are out. I've never in my lifetime heard anything like that from England or any of them. France is still currently out there saving people. Britain is staying behind after we leave tonight. We're going to leave. Why are we leaving before the 31st when our allies are still on the ground?
Glenn, I've got even bigger questions for you. Why are we accepting that this is set in stone? Why are we accepting the most humiliating defeat at the hands of a terrorist organization aided and abetted by our allies? Did you see what the Pakistani president Imran Khan said? He literally said that the Taliban have been freed. The people of Afghanistan have been freed from the chains of slavery. That's how he referred to the U.S. Do you know that since 1951, 70 years straight, the United States has been funding Pakistan? Literally billions and billions and billions of dollars. Why are we sending taxpayer dollars to Pakistan to finance the Taliban and Haqqani and Al-Qaeda to kill American soldiers on that battlefield? Why are we not acknowledging our Afghan allies, the former Vice President, Amrullah Saleh, who is now acting president, who is fighting right now? Why are we pushing the Taliban's propaganda narrative that all the Afghans surrendered and that the Afghan army and the special operations, they're worthless? All that money spent in all those years, and look at them, they're so useless. How many times have you read that or heard that? And it is an abject lie. Yes, there were soldiers that gave up, but there were many units that kept fighting. And not only that, who would say to their ally, why would you do this? Why would you take a highly specialized special operations force trained by the best operators we have that relies on mobility, and in one moment strip it of all of its mobility, the U.S. air support, and at the same moment take all of the maintenance contractors that have kept the Afghan Air Force in the skies and strip those away? And then at exactly the same moment, take away all of your auxiliary support that goes with that, your soldiers, your bases, your logistics, your supply lines. Why would you do that? And show me the army on earth that could possibly have all that stripped away from it in one moment. And I'm not saying they didn't have warning, they didn't know. That's not the same thing as having a replacement structure already there that's functioning and working. And also what people shouldn't be deceived by and shouldn't fall for is that anyone who's saying what I'm saying right now isn't saying that we have to stay in Afghanistan forever or that the U.S. can't withdraw. We could still leave a special operations counterterrorism component. We could still be doing air support. We could obliterate the Taliban, literally obliterate the Taliban leadership. Their forces are all out in the open. You know why? Because they're literally standing there laughing at you, dancing on America's grave. That's what they're doing. They don't fear you. And you know what? When the Taliban doesn't fear you, and Al-Qaeda doesn't fear you, and Hezbollah doesn't fear you, and Hamas doesn't fear you, the Iranians don't fear you, and neither do any of our other adversaries. Neither does Pakistan, neither does China, none of them. So you watch. Americans have, you know, they have this false sense of security. They've gone off in the world knowing this invisible shield that we've had around us, that we're all protected by the power and the moral authority of this nation, because the idea of freedom is the idea for which we are all prepared to fight and live and die for, right? That's the idea. Because we believe that this is a noble idea and it's worth fighting for. As Amrullah Saleh, the acting president, said to me in an interview just before all of this happened, he actually said to me, called me one day and he was worried because we're friends and I've known him for many years. And he said, Lara, what is happening there? He said, you know, if the light goes out in America, it goes out everywhere. Then the whole world is plunged into darkness. It cannot go out in America. And, you know, that is what we're looking at, Glenn. The light has gone out in America. It's not gone out in our hearts and souls as Americans, you know, and as people who believe in this. But if we don't stop what's happening now, then we are dying with it. Because is fake.
Laura, I can't thank you enough. I have to run for a network break. I'd like to talk to you some more on this. Thank you for all of your hard work. We just got in that there is a large explosion at Abbey Gate at the Kabul airport. This is something that we have been warned about for the last 24 hours. We'll bring you more details as they become available to us. Back in just a minute. So I am trying to eat healthier, and I am. But the thing is, I don't like healthy food. I don't like any of it. You've heard of a fat suit, right? I mean, there's got to be. When are we getting a skinny suit? Something that will make me look skinny, because I just want treats all the time. I grew up in a bakery, for the love of Pete. The bad news is no skinny suit is coming. You actually have to do the work, blah, blah, blah. That's why I am eating Built Bars. It satisfies my sweet tooth, but it's a protein bar, but not like, you know, that's like eating stuff at the bottom of my chalkboard usually. This is 100% real chocolate. It's low carb, low sugar. If I'm eating a protein bar as a treat, come on, you gotta know it's good. And I am. Mint brownie, cookies and cream, the new flavors that are coming out all the time, they're fantastic. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code BECK15 for 15% off your order. Your mouth is going to water just looking at them. Trust me, BuiltBar.com, promo code BECK15.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
This is the Glenn Beck program live from the Middle East. I'm going to take you directly to Kabul, the airport now, where our good friend and the founder of Mighty Oaks is on the ground. Hello, Chad. How are you?
Good, Glenn. How are you?
Good. You're still at the airport in Kabul?
Actually, I'm out. I'm in the same neighborhood.
You are out.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
But
good. I've been worried.
We still have two of our guys there.
About the airplane? What about the airplane that was full of people? I don't want to tell that story. That's your story to tell if you're ready to tell that. I'm just worried about those people.
Yeah, man. I wish I could. It wasn't an airplane. It was buses. And I wish I could say it right now, but we have to get our guys out off the ground first.
That's fine. So. That's fine. So tell us what you know, Chad. Tell us what the situation is like. You were there earlier. I know.
Yeah, we have us together with the coalition we have with what you guys are doing at Nazarene Fund. We got 5,200 people off the ground, and that's it's one of these stories that it's tough to reconcile, because you have this one side of you that's so happy and joyful. I just got back from the humanitarian center where we have been bringing people in the country that we're in, and I got to see these people that I'm looking around, and it overwhelmed me, and I got just so emotional, because we've been working hard so hard all week. I've only got 6 hours of sleep in the last 5 days, and we've been working so hard, and to walk in to see these people and know that they have a chance, they have hope, and see these little kids, and And I got to see my interpreter that I got out and his family, and his kids ran up to me and hugged me. And I was just so emotional and overwhelmed. So there's this sense of joy, but then there's also this sense of what we've seen in Kabul, where you have people left, American citizens left. People were still in sewage ditches trying to climb their way over Constantino wire, throwing their kids. I didn't see it, but one of my buddies, Joe, saw three babies dead in the Constantino wire, where moms tried to throw their babies over the Constantino wire, or moms or dads tried to throw their babies over the Constantino wire, just hoping, rather give away their baby than have it be under the Taliban, and the babies got tangled up in the Constantino wire and were dead in there. And now we're hearing reports of dads shooting their daughters, not because they want to kill their daughters, because they don't want their daughters to endure the suffering of the Taliban. And it's just a horrific situation, and my heart just breaks to know these people are just still, they're left there. And we did it, our government. I've never, as a proud American, as someone, I'm the most patriotic guy I think I know, and to ever feel embarrassed and ashamed of our country. I sat in front of this morning in a conference room, and I had four generals from a foreign military, amazing nation that had helped these people, 18 lawyers, their minister of interior, the minister of foreign affairs, and I just thanked them for helping us, but I also had to apologize for our country and putting them in a situation to have to help. And now our country, most importantly, what I think all your listeners need to hear is we still are not doing the right thing. The White House is still stopping people from doing the right thing. Our State Department is paralyzed. They will not move these people. And they put it on the entire rest of the world is participating in this humanitarian crisis on a biblical scale. But the one government that caused this problem is not participating and helping. And it's an embarrassment to our country. And we, the people, need to hold our White House accountable for this. And this is not a political statement about Trump versus Biden and all that stuff that everybody's been caught up in the last years. This is about what's morally right. As human beings, the world can't function this way, not when the strongest, greatest nation in the world behaves this way and treats people this way.
I had a phone call with an ambassador of a country last night, and I had exactly the same conversation, and I was amazed at how this country dismissed America now, just as they're just, we don't trust anymore, but also who would not dwell on it, said, but that's a different story. This is about saving people. And here's this great country that wasn't playing politics at all, didn't care, doesn't want any of the credit. And they are moving heaven and earth. And because of our State Department, their hands were tied.
Yeah. We're talking about the same country, and it's like, I'm looking at these people. I'm looking at their military. I'm looking at their government, the volunteers, the workers. They're feeding these families. I went in the humanitarian center today. There's doctors and toys for the kids, and it's amazing. And I'm like, you people are incredible. Like, they were so amazing to be treating these refugees this way. They feel like they're in a home right now. These people feel like this is not a tent city. It's beyond unbelievable what these people are doing. And our government won't do anything. They won't lift a finger to help.
I think I'm at the place that you are without being able to see the humanitarian side of it, because I'm kind of boxed in and not allowed to go to some of the places that you are. And I can't tell you when you're only seeing the bad side, I feel such empathy for our soldiers, because this must be the way they feel. Because it's just the walls close in on you, and you're like, what is happening?
Well, I mean, how these young, obviously, you know, Mighty Oaks Foundation, you know me, like, there's nothing more I love and support. I've committed my life to our America's military warriors, and so I love our troops, but our military is not doing the job of the military right now. The State Department took over the NEO, and the NEO, the non-combatant evacuation operation, which is a DOD function. The White House gave it to the State Department, and our State Department is using our military like embassy security. They treated that airport. They have no business. They don't know what a NEO is. They don't know how to run a NEO. That's not the State Department's job. The White House gave it to them because they thought our military was too emotionally attached to the Afghan, to Afghanistan after 20 years. And the State Department has treated the airport like a embassy. They treated it like an embassy.
So Chad, help me out with this. I believe that our soldiers, the boots on the ground, the people, you know, of the 82nd Airborne, et cetera, they're good, solid people, and they know what's right. But it appears as though the brass, it comes from a different place, cut more from like the White House. Am I reading this wrong?
You're reading it 100%. Man, I wish I could tell you that story right now. And when I can,
I want to
expose this story because it's horrific. But
I will tell you, you tell the story and we'll get our teeth into it, and I will be right with you. I will not let go until those people pay.
They have to pay. I mean, from Joint Chief Milley on down, they you know, have made our U.S. military. Have used our United States military to do a job in a way that that's costing American lives and the lives of our allies, and I couldn't imagine, you know, being in the position of our military service members right now, and being forced to do things that are immoral, inhumane, and against who America is. They're against everything they raised their hand and made an oath to do. And they're being forced to do that by the leaders in Washington, D.C., sitting back and, you know, making decisions based on whatever the White House is saying, but not what's right. And what's made America always great is that America does what's, at the end of the day, America, you know, does what's right.
That's what's right.
How
many Americans do you think are going to be left behind? I got word, I don't know if this is true now. I don't know what's true and what's not. I got word that the embassy staff, all the foreign embassy staff, left behind. How many Americans do you suppose are left behind?
Well, you know, we've continued to hear the number 10,000, but I've also heard that a number could be twice that many because the State Department does not require you to register. You know, I think the one thing White House Press Secretary Psaki said was, that's been right, is that, you know, U.S. people don't have to register and don't have to register when you leave. And you know, it's the freedom we have. And so that's not a very well-tracked database that the State Department has. So the State Department really didn't have any idea. But between 10 and 20,000 are going to be left there. And look, the military, this is over. The military is leaving. I wouldn't be surprised to wake up tomorrow morning and different, you know, I don't know, your U.S. listeners, different time zone, but here, you know, it's about to unite. I wouldn't be surprised to wake up tomorrow morning and they're gone.
Well, the Pentagon just said that they aren't going anywhere until the 31st, but that's different than what we hear on the ground here. We hear that things are advancing rapidly and they're pulling the troops out right now. You know, again, I don't know what is true and what is not, unless we hear from the people who are actually on the ground and they've seen it.
It appears they're leaving. Now, if they stay to 31st just to say they did, you know, they may do that and they may leave a contingency just to say they did and pull out. But right now, there's really no relevance of them even being there because we are not rescuing people anymore. You know, we as the NGO doing this shut down. The military is not doing anymore. The gates are sealed. As far as rescue, it's over. I mean, we've essentially handed over our citizens to the Taliban.
Chad.
And, you know, what I believe to be the most horrific hostage situation in history of the United States.
You had a plan. You had a plane that was getting ready to take off, and it was canceled because we flew a plane in, and that hit a cap here where we're at. Did that? Has that? Are those people safe? Those women and children.
There was women and children on that we were going to pick up that flight. Those are safe.
Yes.
Thank God. And you know, and look, you and I talked about this. Everyone was just trying to do the right thing at 1,000 miles an hour.
No, I know.
And it's a good thing. So
I know. It's just been on our mind and on our heart that these people were possibly trapped as things get better. Thank God they're out.
No. That was a CSS story. So I don't know where they are, but I know those people didn't get put back out the fence.
Okay. Let us know, Chad, when we can help expose what's going on, because I know the story that you have to tell, and it will horrify Americans. It will truly, truly horrify Americans. So thanks for everything that you're doing,
Chad. I'm watching my phone for the wheels to go up in that plane, and as soon as I do, I'll text you.
Okay, thank you. Chad Robichaux, I can't thank him enough. You should pray for him and the Mighty Oaks Foundation. It is an amazing group of people who are doing incredible things here on the ground. Thank you so much, Chad. Back in a minute.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. I want to start with some good news. And I'm also, I guess part of that good news is we have Tom Cotton on, who can tell us the truth of what he knows is going on. But I also want to tell you and pretty much just let you know what's happening to your money. I had one of the most bizarre experiences of my life just before this opening monologue here, out in the hallway, and I want to explain it to you and share some news with you. Coming up in 60 seconds. Believe it or not, I didn't think I would like my pillow because if I picked it up in a store, I would have been like, I'd like something a little more firm, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how exactly it works, but you put your fist through each end of the pillow and it fluffs it and it lasts the whole night. They also have at MyPillow the Giza Dream Sheets, which are also fantastic. These are unbelievable. You pay a buttload of money for soft, soft sheets with a high thread count and all that bull crap. These are on sale now for as low as $49.99. And I'm telling you, and I mean this, these are the softest sheets I've ever slept on. They're made with Giza cotton, the softest cotton in the world. They get softer and softer the more you use them. They're breathable, cool to the touch, and really durable. It's MyPillow, MyPillow.com. They have all the products for your sleep and a 60-day money-back guarantee. So if you get the pillow and you're like, I hate this, just ship it back. It's MyPillow.com. Click on the Radio Listener Specials. Get the Giza Dream Sheets for as low as $49.99 with the promo code Beck. Do it now, MyPillow.com. Hello, America. Welcome to the program. I'm going to finish this story in a minute, but I will tell you that in between breaks, I went out into the hallway, and we have been working on something for the last 24 hours because the receiving airports are full, and our State Department is blocking these people from leaving. And through divine providence, which I will tell you in a little while, we happened to be traveling with somebody who had an answer. and he has been working for 24 hours, and that answer is about to come through. We were talking about the cost of this, and it's going to cost about $2 million for 1,000 people. And everybody looked at me, and I said, gosh, I can't believe we're negotiating for people. I think $2 million is probably a good price for 1,000 people. But it is bizarre what is going on right now. And our country is on the wrong side. For the first time in my life, I am ashamed, truly ashamed, morally ashamed of our country. Senator Tom Cotton joins us now, and I'm guessing he feels somewhat the same way about what is happening. Senator, how are you, sir? Thanks for joining us.
Glenn, it's good to be back on with you, but under very difficult circumstances, of course. What's happened in Afghanistan over the last couple of weeks is sad, it's tragic. It is shameful, disgraceful, humiliating, embarrassing. And maybe worst of all, Glenn, it wasn't predictable, it was predicted. Many observed that if President Biden executed his decision withdrawal in the middle of the fighting season by withdrawing the critical enabling support that the Taliban had, or I'm sorry, that the Afghan army had, for instance, with Western contractors to keep their Air Force flying, we'd be pulling the rug out from underneath them. And you've started to see some reports come out in the media that says that it was predicted directly to Joe Biden, no matter what he's been saying to the American people, that this would be the fate that we face right now.
Senator, you know, there are bad decisions, but this is a pattern here now. It's not just a pattern because of what he has done before. I mean a pattern here. There is a doubling down of everything. There is a refusal to see what is going on, which makes me wonder if, A, the president is mentally competent, and that's being kind, or there is something else at play here, because there's not an ally that is with us. There is not a sane individual, left, right, center. It doesn't matter. Politics all aside, there's blood all over our hands on this. And I can't figure out why. Why is this happening? Why is he doing this?
So, Glenn, I mean, the pattern, I would say, goes back now 50 years. Remember, Bob Gates famously said of Joe Biden when they both served in the Obama administration that he's been wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security decision of his lifetime. It was 40 years when Secretary Gates wrote that. It's 50 years now. The difference is for most of those 50 years, it didn't matter too much because he was a senator and then a vice president. He wasn't in charge, but he is in charge now. And you see in catastrophic relief the consequences of his terrible judgment. I think his attitude over the last 2 weeks does also reflect something of Joe Biden's character, kind of like the anytime he's challenged, he defaults to this wise guy attitude of mocking the media. Now, I understand that he's not used to being challenged by the media, but they finally have started to press him on his numerous falsehoods and press those people around him. And you can tell that it gets under his skin and he gets spiteful and prideful and bitter. And he just digs in his heels even more, even though the circumstances on the ground are obviously deteriorating, and they have been for some time.
Well, that's what I can't figure out. Is anyone telling him the truth of what's going on? Is the Pentagon for this? Is there anyone that is standing up in his council that is saying, Mr. President, A, I understand you already made the decision, but now the entire world is not standing with us, and people are going to die. There are Americans that you are leaving behind. Is anyone saying that to him?
Yeah, Glenn, all of his speeches on the question have been dangerously detached from reality now for a couple of weeks. Just as, frankly, that speech in early July was, when he said there'd be no Saigon moment, we wouldn't have a collapse of the government. I think it's pretty clear, based on the news report, that both the Department of Defense and our intelligence agencies were sounding those alarms to President Biden. But another thing about which I want to remind your listeners that Bob Gates said is that Joe Biden has a very mistrustful relationship with senior military leaders. Even Barack Obama has said in his own memoirs that Joe Biden, as vice president, constantly cautioned then President Obama about listening to the senior military leaders at the Pentagon about how they were going to try to box him in, how they'd try to direct policy, not implement his policy. And I think you see the consequences of that, of President Biden's attitude now, is that despite the warnings from senior leaders, the Pentagon and intelligence agencies, he plowed straight ahead. So I think, Glenn, the real question then becomes, are those closest to him in the White House, in his inner circle, speaking the truth to him? Are they conveying the genuine news? And I have questions if they are, based on those speeches he's given. And also, Glenn, I have to say, I think some of them view this as just kind of a bad, news day. You know, like in a campaign, you send Joe Biden out to a radio interview in the campaign last year, and he makes a gaffe, and you've got a couple days of bad headlines. But pretty soon things move on. And they're treating this fiasco in Afghanistan like it's just a bad headline from a campaign, and they want to just turn the page and get back to their reckless $3.5 trillion budget. But it's not just a bad headline whenever you've got hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans trapped behind enemy lines. It's reality. And those Americans are going to be stuck there after Tuesday, to say nothing of the green card holders that we can't get into the country, and those Afghans who served alongside us and who have been vetted and approved for a special immigrant visa. They're all going to be stranded.
The word is here, I'm in the Middle East, and the word is here that there are 1,800 that worked for the embassy that have special visas, want to get out, and have no chance of getting out now. We're leaving them behind. It's reprehensible.
Yeah, I mean, it is reprehensible. It's appalling. It's also strategically foolish. Imagine the challenges we'll have for years to come if we ever need local support in a hotspot around the world. This is one reason why great and respected countries keep their word, which Joe Biden now has broken flagrantly, and in a way that will reverberate for years to come.
So there's no way to stop this? There's not an appetite in Congress to, and I don't mean from the Republicans, I mean from the Democrats. Is there not enough people in Congress and in the Senate to stand up and be a check and a balance on this reckless, dangerous behavior?
Well, Glenn, I think what you've seen from the Democrats is a deafening silence. A very, very few number of Democrats, oftentimes veterans themselves, maybe serving on the Armed Services or the Intelligence Committee, have suggested that we need to, at a minimum, stay as long as it takes to get out all of the Americans who are in Afghanistan. But most Democrats just don't want to talk about it at all. As you saw with Nancy Pelosi, she just wanted to talk about their reckless $3.5 trillion budget. They're like President Biden's flip blades. They just want to keep their head down, grit and bear it like it's a bad news cycle on a campaign, and then turn the page. Hopefully after next Tuesday, it's all going to be out of the headlines and the media will move on.
It's going to be worse.
I don't see how are we going to move on if we have hundreds or even thousands of Americans who are stranded in Afghanistan when the Taliban at that point control not just all the border crossings, but all the airports in the country.
And this is, I mean, the only hope, and I say this with just callous disregard to humanity, but the only hope is that there will be no press there to report it. But so far, the Taliban still has Twitter, still has Facebook. And I don't think they're going to be shy in showing some of it.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
then they'll amazing. Violate the yeah. Twitter standards.
Well, I mean, that is a big difference between one of the big differences between where we are now and where the Taliban was 20 years ago before 9/11 is social media didn't really exist back then. And as we've seen with ISIS over the years, ISIS is very aggressive in their use of social media for propaganda purposes and recruiting and training. And I suspect that'll be the same. That'll be true of the Taliban as well.
Quickly, one last question. I know you've got to run. Thank you, A, for kicking some butt with the State Department. But can you give me an update on the State Department? We last night had an ambassador called in, I think it's Macedonia. They closed off. We were looking for places where we can fly people in just to hold them. And Macedonia was one of them. And our ambassador, or